Hi, this is the Dark Tangent. The speech you're about to listen to was originally recorded at DEF CON 5 at the Aladdin Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1997. Now, all rights are reserved except permission for educational non-profit use. If you have any questions about DEF CON or the copyright status, contact me at dtangent@defcon.org or the website at www.defcon.org. Now kick back and relax.
You gotta speak, get the microphone first.
Okay, for a while I've been playing around with a few tools here and there, finding out what I like, what I don't like, and
okay. And there's some good stuff out there. Go ahead and say it, Jeff.
No, no, no. I kind of forced him to talk real quick because I'm thinking he said so. Rather than make a note to
you. All right, I'll take it.
Okay.
There's several different applications of cryptography in personal computers and for individual use. A lot of you have heard about PGP and using it to encrypt email. Some of the people who aren't familiar with cryptography, and that's my target audience, and as far as this talk goes, you've actually been like doing cryptographic software development. This is going to bore you. Feel free to harass the locals. But for those of you who don't know anything about cryptography, that's the goal of this talk. And even if you haven't been using it, you've probably heard of PGP, pretty good privacy. And it works really well for encrypting email, but it's not a total solution. So you need to fill in some of the other gaps. Yes, PGP has the ability to encrypt and decrypt files. But in everyday use, that can tend to be a little unwieldy, a little hard to automate. I want to edit this file. I've got a lot of information in this Word document. You have to sort of like open up a window, decrypt the file, edit the file, re-encrypt it. And after a while, that gets a little tedious, and people stop encrypting because it takes too much effort. And that is a weakness of several systems. You've got strong cryptography, but it starts to break down when it becomes too hard to use. So there's a lot of other tools out there that might work better in other applications. If you're encrypting and decrypting a lot of files, PGP is not the way to go. There are other utilities out there that will allow you to set up a drive or a file system under Unix and have it fully encrypted. This way, when you want to start working with something encrypted, you deal with the setup once, you mount the file system, type in the passphrase, it works. You do everything you want to do just before you shut the system down or log out of your system. You unmount the file system or the secure drive, and you then log out or turn off the system. The secure file systems and secure drives that are available under DOS, it just acts like another drive letter. It works off your current disk space. Your applications don't know that you're writing to something encrypted. However, it does take a little bit longer to access the encrypted information because it does need to encrypt and decrypt, which is not an easy task. By using these products, you can actually keep things more secure on your system. If someone gets your password, someone takes the actual computer, you can ensure that your information is still safe on those drives. The only thing to watch out for is if you forget your passphrase, it's over. On the good product, there is just no way to get the information back. So it helps to get into the practice of just encrypt everything. The book reports for school, the shopping list, mount up that encrypted file system. When you save it off the disk, save it off the totally encrypted file system, you get in the habit of using it, you remember that passphrase. That way, you don't have to write that passphrase down. That's another major, major weakness. Did you have a question back there? I'll mention a couple names at the end. I don't have like a comprehensive list. They're not too hard to find. There's some commercial, some shareware. But I will get to some names. By using the passphrase a lot, you remember it. There's been a lot of times where security has been compromised in some large corporations because secretaries have had passwords written on post-it notes stuck around the monitor. You shake your head, but it happens. When you deal with like PGP and cryptographic file systems, you want large key lengths. And in order to keep those large key lengths secure, your passphrase needs to be longer than your standard Unix passphrase. Most of them recommend a minimum of 16 characters for the passphrase. This is a lot harder to remember the passphrase if you have a good mixture of characters for that passphrase, like you would have a good mixture under like a Unix password. You can break it down into small chunks. 8 characters is not a lot to remember. When you start getting 16 as your minimum length, it gets a lot harder. You want to use it often to remember that passphrase. And by using it often, you also put more and more information underneath your encrypted file system. And that way, if anybody does decide they want to attack your system and look and try to find sensitive information, they'll have this vast amount of encrypted stuff. And they don't know what they're trying to break, whether it's top 10 list of wanted friends and where their current hideout is, or the shopping list from last week. If you only encrypt the highly sensitive data, they know that just breaking a little bit would be of value. But if things like your shopping list in there, list of all your friends' birthdays, you've got a lot more information in there, and it makes extracting sensitive bits a lot harder. Excuse me a minute here. It's more difficult because you've got a lot more text there. Not all of them. Certain routines use a chaining method for in the cipher block. That's going into a little bit more detail than I wanted to go into at this level. And by having lots of information in there, they don't have as much. You don't have as high of a chance of stumbling across something sensitive. A lot of time when you're breaking things, you're looking for certain portions, and in some of the more advanced systems, you can actually have multiple keys. The other advantage is in that is it adds a lot more randomness to it.
Decode one file and you got the key. You can decode the rest of it
in. True, but when you're trying to hunt and actually make the attack, it's a lot harder to reverse to get the key. I mean, if you're attacking the passphrase and you have something that's weak, you have something that's weak. Your system is only secure as the weakest link. So if you've got an easy to get passphrase, well, you're done for anyway. So these types of tools can actually be beneficial and keep people out of your system more than passwords otherwise might, or locking up the system and inserting a boot floppy to get in and break into the system. And you can actually keep things a lot more secure that way. Another important application that would be valuable to be using is encrypted sessions. And I found a couple tools that I really like with encrypted sessions. SSH is really, really gaining in popularity, and I very highly recommend it. There's SSH clients for just about every system out there, and for those systems with compilers, you can just compile up a version of SSH for that system. And this allows you to make encrypted sessions to other hosts, log in securely, and all the traffic that travels between your system and the remote system is encrypted, and people sniffing the wire will not be able to see what you're doing. Another advantage of SSH is if you're actually on a Unix box and you've got connecting to another Unix box and are running like some X Windows applications, the X Windows applications themselves can be encrypted. Without that, it's really easy. I mean, you may think, okay, things are secure, I've got an X term up, I'm typing into it, but in reality, the text might be traveling in the clear, and people can see you log into like other systems from there. So using SSH, it cuts down on the way people can sniff you. With fully encrypted sessions, your passwords are also protected. You don't have to worry about when you initially log in, someone grabbing your password off the wire. This prevents people from stealing your account and yeah. Ooh, we got two people right in a row there. In front.
I assume that
that's
being supported both on the local and
the
modem.
Yes, SSH does. There's another product that I also like that does, and I'll go into that in a second. Hey, Clark?
What's the availability of SMB servers for newer
apps? I don't remember the price on the Windows client. The company is
50 or 300.
There's the source code available for SSH.
What about the user?
Right. The source code is available for both the client and the server. The source code is like there's one package and it has both the client and the server in it, and it's Unix based source code. This allows, it cuts down on the number of ways people can sniff. SSH does need to be installed on the remote system. However, another product that I use periodically is ESM, Encrypted Session Manager. It doesn't necessarily have to be set up by a system administrator on the remote system. EFM comes in SourceKit and unfortunately does not compile on a lot of systems, but its advantage over SSH is with ESM, you don't have to have a pure TCP/IP connection to the other machine. So it'll work over dial-up, it'll work over proxy firewalls, and other mechanisms. What it does is you run the client locally, you connect to the remote machine, and then run the other version, run the same program in a server mode, and it sets up an encrypted session. It does require that you log in first, but if you are your system administrator, you can set up a ESM login with a fairly generic password, and it can be set up secure such that people knowing the ESM password will not compromise security of the system. That way, when you connect to the site, you type in the ESM password, log in as ESM, it runs ESM, sets up the encrypted session, and immediately gives you another login prompt. Then you log in with your name and password, and you're logged into the system. But your login and your password was sent encrypted. It requires a little bit of extra work on the system administrator's part to set that up, but it's handy in situations where you're coming in over non-fully networked connections. ESM comes with the source code for ESM comes with the CFS, cryptographic file system for Unix. Both of those codes are bundled within the same tar file. There is some limitations on what platforms they will compile under. They were written, and the course of development was done by Matt Blade at AT&T. And he's mostly, got it working for his platform, and it's up to everybody else to get it working underneath their platforms. I've recently made changes to the code to get it running under NetBSD again. I have not had a chance to send the patches back to him, but it runs under Linux as well, at least according to the documentation. I don't know the Linux versioning numbers, so I don't know when the last version it actually worked on and how old that is, but it is available and has been rumored to compile on that. One thing to note is that CFS and ESM may not always compile on the same platform. There's some platforms that one works on that the other doesn't. This is due to the people who want one or the other and getting it working on their system, sending the patches back, and not doing the other half of the software. Unfortunately, ESM is not available in a Wintel client that I know of. Maybe somebody else out there has made those changes. If any of you really know Windows networking, you might want to make a stab at it. But it's fairly useful in my book. So far now we've got encrypted file systems, encrypted telnet sessions with some X-Windows encrypted over one of the flavors, and we've got encrypted mail. Some of the newer roads that are being pushed forth in encrypting is the SWAN project, which is trying to really push the encryption at a lower level, so whenever you connect from machine to machine, things are automatically encrypted. It's a lot more technical, but it's a lot more automated, and it's one of the things you may want to look for when you're shopping around for what OS you want to run on your home PC. I don't know of any support for any of the Windows or either 95 or NT for it, but there are versions being hacked upon for OpenBSD and most of the NetBSD stuff should just be able to pull that down and link right in. And I guess some of the Linux people have been integrating that as well. So that will automate secure connections between machines. The only problem there is it's going to take a while for that to get deployed, so you can't count on that at the moment. So I highly recommend going out, getting some of these other packages, installing them, playing around with them, and getting used to thinking about things securely. With encrypted file systems, you really need to use that on a regular basis, or else you forget your passphrases. On my system, there's one or two file systems that I've set up that, yeah, I've forgotten the passphrase too. Fortunately, I did not have much in there, but it's like there is no way to recover it. A lot of other products have like secret backdoors. Some Intel motherboards have the special password you enter in the PROM to get into the CMOS if you've forgotten your passphrase. But on a lot of these freely available ones, it's just you cannot get the information back if you lose it. If you're using PGP, it's also important to remember the passphrase. You get a hold of like a business edition, it's got key escrow in it, which means you can split out your key, give it to trusted friends. But remember, in that, it depends on how trusted they are. There's ways of taking a key, breaking it up into pieces, and giving it out. That's a little bit more secure if you can trust that they're not going to get together and start becoming you. As PGP has progressed, there have been it's being turned into a library which will make other programs be able to use PGP, PGP keys, and so forth in other applications. But we haven't seen a lot of those applications out there yet, and I haven't really seen anything freely available that's been highly interesting. Yes?
Have you played with libraries, you know, just this version where they write programs or so that cookies can authenticate people that are trying to log in, in other words, they don't already know how to use the PGP system? Have you played with that or used it for a time?
I've heard about it. I haven't had a lot of chance to play with all the business features of VIACrypt. I own a copy of VIACrypt. I've got actually two licenses for it. I've got the business edition. It's just I haven't played with all the business edition features. A lot of them are
theoretically it seems viable. It seems like it really works.
I wouldn't put too much trust in maintaining all the VIACrypt features because PGP Incorporated did buy them out, and PGP has really gone their own direction with where they want the software to go. So relying too heavily on some of those other features may leave people hanging when the software becomes obsolete. PGP 5, it supports new signature types, new encryption routines, so relying too much on some of the older ones, especially if you've got things set up to simplify things for users, they're not going to learn any of the interface. So when it becomes so old, it's not really compatible with enough things, they'll be really, really left stranded. So I don't recommend too much on automation in that manner. But the business edition does have a lot of neat features.
Yeah, as far as launch activity, the tip-based product, like Dr. Elvis, is also available.
Thank you.
Yes, have you had a chance to play on Private Idaho and an office from Daily as well?
Not recently. Yes, anonymous emails are out there. There's several different flavors, but I've been working on another project and haven't been emailing all that anonymously. Usually when I'm sending emails, I kind of want a response back, and I haven't encountered a situation where I don't mind the person knowing who I am. I take advantage of using some of the anonymized web browsing, though. I mean, I've hit some sites where I don't want them knowing who I am. But as far as free mailers go, I don't have a strong need for it at this point, so I haven't really been actively hunting in that area. So, I did mention that I was going to give off a couple names of products. Talked about SSH, got ESM, CSS, that's available. You send mail to cfs@research.att.com. You do have to be a U.S. citizen, otherwise they will not... he will not give you the source code. In the mail, just kind of make some notes that yes, I am a U.S. citizen, blah, 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 and I would like blah, blah, blah. And he'll mail you the file. It's not the most efficient way of distributing the software, but it does keep things pretty much in check. SSH. That's probably a web search. I don't remember a URL offhand. That works. A lot of the Windows products, we're not sure where they're located. I believe one is actually called Secure Drive. If you do a web search, you'll probably find enough pointers to find some of these software. Remember, if you're not in the U.S., don't live in the U.S., and you're not a U.S. citizen, don't get it from a U.S. FTP site. Hopefully I've appeased all these feds that are in the room. But by using these tools, you can keep bad guys out and so forth, and keep your system fairly secure. Yes, Jeff?
Would you ever use TCP mail? What do you think? I mean, what do you use to protect your mail? What tools or anything?
I've just got to kind of see things through PGP.
So, I'm just wondering because I would like to start protecting my mail easier with PGP. What do you suggest?
Yeah, go ahead and give PGP mail a try. I mean, I found a staff. That sounded like a whole lot of religious war in mail programs. And everybody likes their flavor of mail programs. And there's a lot of scripts out there that will automate using your favorite Unix-based mail program with PGP. You can find these usually in the unsupported directory in the FTP site that's a distribution point for your mail program. Sometimes it's called third party. Check there for various scripts. And that would probably be the best place to find scripts to integrate PGP with your mail program. what some work better than others, and it really depends on the mailer and what you're familiar with. And it's like trying a couple to find out which one's more intuitive for you. Did I answer your question, Jeff?
I'm
just wondering
in general, I don't care, I'll pick any client. I just want to know what works for. Over there.
He's asking at the corporate level if you've got a corporate LAN and two sites, like, is there a way of making an encrypted session transparently from one LAN to the other so that the users don't have to worry about it? Yeah, there's several products out there. It's known as tunneling. We set up basically a virtual private network, and so all the systems think they're on the same network, and the firewalls merely just pass the information to the other side through an encrypted tunnel. There's several products out there that do that. One of the products is Black Hole. That's not an endorsement, though. I don't see a lot of firewall calls, but I haven't really been keeping track of everybody who's doing it. If you do a search on Black Hole, I'm sure you'll come up with something and enough keywords there to do searches on everybody else. I think
SSLock has a product. People make SSH.
So, and I think I've heard rumors that Firewall One does it as well. So. Which?
Charles Rich.
So, yeah, there's a lot of buzz software out there that actually does it, so you just need to know what the right buzzwords are. Any other questions? I mean, I'm pretty much done with my overview, so feel free to ask questions. Anyone? Offhand, I haven't memorized anything recently. There's a huge pile of specs. That's the neat thing about standards, there's so many to choose from. You may want to take a look at like the IPsec stuff. Look underneath the IPv6 documentation. But yeah, I don't really know how to memorize details off on what's out there and what everything says. Anyone else? Not that I know of. There might be small private ones, but there's not that many resources that one would legitimately want to come in anonymously into. That's the time when you're telnetting, you've got a login and password on someplace anyway, and usually they have some idea that you're a real person and you're someone. So the idea of it being anonymous isn't a strong drive. Anyone else? Okay, thank you for coming.